Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil. Next, I take an ice bath. Ooh, feeling super healthy.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com, Cygnos.com, with code SPARK. Cygnos.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their five-star husbands who've agreed to read with them. I'm John.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Con.
And I'm Lauren. Today, we're diving into all things When the Moon Hatched with a listener Q&A bonus episode. There was no assigned reading for this week since we have officially finished the book. Today, we'll be answering all your burning questions about theories, characters, rankings, and more, plus our own guesses for book two, The Ballad of Falling Dragons, coming April 28th, 2026.
That being said, we will be discussing all the spoilers today for When the Moon Hatched. This is your final spoiler warning. Please finish the entire book and epilogue before listening to this episode. Then get super excited for next week because we will be joined by Sarah A. Parker herself for a full author interview. We will talk to her about her journey writing the series, her favorite moments, and maybe even get the inside scoop on what's coming next. You will not want to miss it.
Yes. If you like listening to us, are you for free? Imagine what $5 a month could do. Find out on Patreon for just $5 a month. You could be a book bestie and gain access to our Discord, plus monthly book talks, live hangs, plenty of extra fun. Maybe you're here for more. For $10 a month, you can join our Found Family tier and get access to early ad-free episodes, shiny merch discounts, exclusive Discord chats, voting power, and unlimited breadsticks. We'd love to get to know you more on Patreon.
And help us reach more ears, or at least make our moms proud, by writing a review. It's free, it only takes a moment, and you might even get a little shout-out on the podcast. Like this one, here's a recent five-star review on Apple Podcasts from our new bestie, Melanie Rivera, titled, TOG Coverage is Giving Me Life. I just recently found this podcast, and I'm living for the Throne of Glass coverage. I finished the series earlier this year, and I am loving reliving it. It's so fun hearing Lauren and Kyle talk through their theories, and the amount of things they have guessed correctly is insane, and also has made me realize that my critical thinking skills were on another planet while reading these books. I mean, how are they doing this? I need to reread immediately. Okay, anyways, love you guys, and so excited to listen to the Empyrean and Quicksilver coverage as well. Thank you, Melanie Rivera.
That's amazing.
Okay, Melissa. Love you.
Thank you.
My goodness.
Okay, Lydia, love you. Bye-bye.
Perfect.
Since there's no pronunciation guide or chapter recap today, let's dive right into your submissions for this Q&A. So one of the most asked questions we received was, what the heck is going on? And to answer that, you can go back, listen to episode 6 from last week. We talked through all of the details of, like, what the heck was going on at the end of this book. So go back, I'm telling you, listen to episode 6. We cover a lot. Yes, go back, reread. So check out episode 6 and then come back. You'll be good.
And with that, we're going to head into the questions, starting with some general reactions and thoughts. So the first question today is, what were your favorite moments or quotes from the book?
I had a couple that I thought of here. I got super excited when Khan brought Rave back to the stronghold from the Tuca trial. Like, for the first time, we meet the inner circle. We start meeting a bunch of the characters from Khan's court or whatever. That was really exciting to me because that was like, it was Khan's POV chapter. It was only his second one. So there's a little bit of change in dynamic there. And then we got to meet a bunch of new characters. So that was really fun. Another one that I thought of was the first other chapter toward the beginning, where she just literally eviscerates all those guards. Incredible action. Loved that. Definitely got excited reading through that. So,
well, and it like straight up comes out of nowhere is not what's expected at all.
Yeah. You're just like, wait a minute. It's just like the other, like what?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The whole concept of those chapters is so unlike anything I've ever read with the added experience of the audiobook. It's like,
oh, yeah.
So good.
For sure. For me, and as sad as it is, I feel like Essie's whole little story at the beginning is probably what I think about the most when I think about the book, only because it's like the only part that actually made me cry, or how quickly I was connected to a character that had so little page time, I guess, up to that point, and how, I guess, just precious all of that was, and big moment for Rave and everything. But I also thought of one, like, for the podcast in general, every time that John called Hawk Honk. It still makes me laugh every time I think about it and calling him Honk. Good job, John. Honk.
I just had written the beginning because first starting reading this book, like with the prologue, there was a point where I was like, oh, okay, I need to go to like a place that I can strictly focus on this right now because this is a lot of information. And it just kept going through the whole book. And I liked that part of it where it's like always something new with that. And then like, yeah, Essie dying and then the other chapter and then the constant travel and new places and new people. It's a lot to take in for sure. I get why our main question is what's going on, but it was quite a ride.
The prologue's so cool too. Mm-hmm. Like that very poetic sort of.
Yeah.
In the Beninki.
Yeah. It's like that TikTok audio, you know, it's like, save a slice for me. Oh, okay. All right. That's enough. That's enough slices. That's like that's the information slices. I was getting from the book. I was like, stop. I need to soak it in for a second. Just let me sit.
Please make that meme. For this book. That's so good. I also had one about Essie. I loved her little, specifically her parchment lark to Rave at the beginning of the book. It just had the cutest, like, crazy bestie vibe. And I was so sad that she didn't make it through more of the book because she had so much personality and voice in just a few short pages. And I really loved that. Pretty much everything Convegor said was 10 out of 10 for me. And then all of Vea's sassy little sister moments, like her calling out Con for the whole sentimental overload that he dumped onto Rave. And then, I don't know, I like started listing some and I just kept thinking of more and more.
Well, another question related to it is what plot twist or reveal surprised you the most?
I will say Rex showing up toward the end of the story there was a pretty big surprise. Because I guess I didn't expect him to have any kind of relationship with like Tyroth or Kadok in like any way whatsoever. I thought I considered him more of like some kind of mercenary, I guess. Did we get information on that when we first meet him? If he was like working for one of them or something, or like working for the crown kind of thing?
I don't know, but now I want to check.
I
continue.
I feel like we knew.
I feel like maybe we did, but I must have forgotten about that because when he showed up.
That's why he was trying to hunt down Rave.
Oh, he was the bounty hunter for the king.
Okay.
The bounter honey.
The bounter honey, yeah.
What?
How could I forget? You don't
That's
remember
what
that?
John said in the episode. Oh,
I called him a bounter honey. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot about that fact when he shows up at the end. So yeah, that was a big surprise.
Yeah.
Yep. On my first read back in April, I completely forgot Kizari existed. 100%. Like, she happens in chapter 13, and then you don't see her again until, like, it's revealed that that's their child or whatever at the very end.
Like, so 85 chapters later.
Yeah. And so I completely forgot she existed. Like, a concept of her being part of the story at all, even whenever we get the, like, prophecy of the child being the one to tie the moons to the sky or tether the moons to the sky or whatever that prophecy is at the Tuca trial. Like, all the things. Like, never once crossed my mind that she already had a child and let alone that it would be Kizari. So that absolutely blew my mind at the end of my first read. Yeah.
Mine is really close to John's, honestly. Not only him showing up, but getting his own chapter. Like, him showing up was one thing, but I was like, why are we even seeing from his point of view? It really threw me off.
I wish I wouldn't have spoiled that for myself on accident because I feel like that would have been my answer.
I literally said the biggest F-bomb when I saw his name at that chapter.
For me, Arkin was the biggest shock in the best way. I was like so excited to have more information on like Rave's sort of second beginning. In the whole book, I was like trying to figure out what that could have possibly been. So that was like really exciting for me and like really shocking that it was like a whole new character we hadn't met yet, but there had been like little ties in with a bunch of the other characters in the book.
Yeah. We're going to move on into a segment of theories and some speculation here. Our first question is, what are your top theories for book number two?
Well, I think, personally, that there will be others like Rave in terms of being decalcified and made into something new. Either it has happened to someone else, or someone like finds out that it happened to her and purposefully does it to themselves to get whatever she has going on with her, you know, connection to Slatra, we assume. I also think we'll get a lot of page time for other side characters like we did for Vea. I think we're going to get a lot more of non-Raven Con chapters.
Mm-hmm. Well, with how she's introduced all these other POVs, like, literally, it feels like nothing's off the table as far as someone's POV. Yeah. If we're getting freaking Rex Zaro's POV.
The Trog. Probably I want a Trog POV.
Oh my gosh. Okay, my initial theory, I guess the thing I leave the book worried about, I mean, obviously Kazari is in prison, but I'm really worried for Vea being in Tyroth's bed chambers. Like, that's where we leave her, is sitting on the bed, probably reading this diary entry. So I'm really worried about that. I think in that interaction, we might learn maybe how she lost her memories, especially if it is tied to Tyroth being the one who's like forced her to forget. Like if he knows about Kizari's being Khan's child and all the stuff, and he's just trying to hide all of those things. So I feel like there's going to be a lot there. I'm really curious if Arkin or the twins, being Tyroth and Kadoth, will be the baddies of this book, the next one, or maybe the other one will be the baddie of book three. Like it's somehow going to be all tied up in there. I'm not convinced Kaelis is evil, but maybe simply misunderstood. And Kizari will help him tether the moons to the sky, whatever that means. And I'm really excited for an epic moment where Slatra finally gives Rave her fire magic. And because she's ready or whatever that means.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Ooh. I have also been concerned that something's going to happen to Vea on her way out of Arithia, like as she's trying to leave where she currently is. I think it will take a while for the truth about Kazari to get back to Khan and Rave, and it will probably happen at different times, and then they'll have to come back to each other somehow. I'm expecting classic villain monologues from Arkin, and I think Khan will go full Papa Bear and kill Arkin, and then I'm hoping that Grimm will come back with the big-ass dragon. But other than that, I really don't know. I feel like this could go anywhere.
Yeah, one of my thoughts that I had here was about Rave hearing all of the elemental songs. I mean, I know right now, like, Slatra is blocking Ignos, but we know that she can hear all four, and we know that Kizari can speak with Kaelis, and we did talk briefly about how the gods kind of seem to, like, favor Rave. We've seen that with Clode, for sure, like, always even talking to her in some instances, like, both Clode and Boulder there when she got to Dom for Slatra's tomb, and even in the jungle, kind of, like, helping her along. The whole rain thing is kind of like up in the air, and then we're not really sure what that relationship with Ignos would look like anyway. I'm wondering if there will be something where she will have to like take down Kazari, if Kaelis almost like possesses her or something, because Ooh. the four gods trapped Kaelis. Because I think Kaelis is gonna be out for like revenge against the other gods. And I think I have a little more on that on one of the questions later. And then I think Rave will eventually kill Arkin. I think maybe he'll get Khan in a bad spot, and Khan will like kind of like need saving kind of thing. And then Rave will end up being the one to kill him.
I like that. Or I could see Khan offering that kill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see Khan offering that kill to Rave because Arkin like tortured her for so long and stuff. Yeah. But he doesn't technically know that yet.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Do also look forward to seeing if Khan ever like fully gets to see the other and like have his view about what's going on and be like, oh crap. That's not Elwyn.
Okay. That would be interesting.
Well, and if Slatra can talk to Rygun, like if they have some sort of conversation and somehow Khan is also part of that because they're what are they?
Start singing a duet. Dagomork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that would be an interesting something to go down.
Do we think Elwyn and Slatra are also Dagomork, or do you think we would have found that out from the diary entries before she died?
I mean, it's not like she really had the opportunity in her adult life to fly on Slotra and like really connect that and make like discover that necessarily, because she was either in the burn and couldn't fly around, and then she was pregnant and she was weak because of Aetherstone and stuff. So
That's true.
Feel like they probably would have been with how Slotra like basically sacrificed her life for Rafe, but I don't think it was actually discovered. But I don't know. All right, one of the theories that was sent our way is that the other, parentheses, Slotra, presumably, will be in control of Rafe for a good part of the second book. What are our thoughts?
I could definitely see this, especially with how it described needing to put Rafe in a tomb of ice. Like, she might not be getting out of that for a while. And I also wonder if that's how Rafe will somehow, I guess, find out about Ignos, although I'm not really sure how that would work, or if the gods could even, like, reach her that way. But it seems like she's going to need to, like, melt it or something, or, like, thaw out to get out of there. So how is she going to do that?
Interesting.
Yeah, that would be... I think that's, like, a cool concept, but I don't necessarily want her fighting against Slotra, so that's my only... thing I don't like about it, but it's a cool idea.
Yeah. I feel like it would be like a necessity thing. Like, she needs to like accept Ignos to be able to thaw herself out.
Ooh.
That'd be cool.
I wonder if one of the people with dragon sight would be able to like identify whatever's going on. But then I think it would be cool to see Rygen communicate with her if Slotra is taking over for a while and it's not like she just wakes up and everything's fine.
Especially if we get to like read that conversation between Slotra and
in like the other POV or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be wild.
So there's like three voices in that chapter going through
the audio. Well, because we got like that little moment, but that was from Rafe's POV, and she did not know what the heck was going on. Like the first time that she saw Rygen, there was just some big reaction from Slotra, and then she started singing in a language she didn't recognize. So it would be really cool to see that from like a Slotra POV or something, or a Khan POV if he like understands more of whatever's happening with Rygen. I don't know.
Maybe she'll thaw out when she finally gives into the fiery passions of love. Melts her way out of the ice.
Her burning loins. Yes.
Maybe.
Out of the icy tomb.
And Ignos is like, yeah, that's what my fire's all about. Love, baby.
Wow.
Let's burn it down.
She like erupts out of Slotra. I got a fire in my loins.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
In the middle of a battle the other's having, it's like, we were doing something else here.
I think that's it. I think we figured out Booker
T. Yeah, there it is.
All right.
There's another theory that was submitted that Khan will find out Kazari is his daughter from Vea before Rafe finds out. And I wrote, probably since Homegirl's the last to find out any information about herself ever. Hashtag classic.
Yeah,
she still doesn't know information about herself. Like, she's got a lot to figure out before she's ready to figure out about Kazari.
Like, she doesn't know all the information about herself. I think Khan will be the last to know.
Whoa.
He's off doing something and somehow everybody else finds out but him. And he like finally comes back to the stronghold or something. And he's like, what's going on? And then everybody's like, everybody knows already.
Well, I could see that being a sweet moment. I am kind of excited for him because like he and Kazari seem to have a really good relationship and like she trusts him. There's already a lot of trust there. I still am wondering if Kazari knows about that because of Kalis, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
I kind of wonder.
I don't think so.
I just kind of wonder if Rafe already know that she has a child, just in general. Like, it feels like something that, yes, you may mentally forget, but I don't know. There's a movie a while ago. I can't remember the title of it, but it was based around aliens stealing this lady's child and erasing her memory of it. Spoiler alert for a movie that I can't name, but the whole premise of it is... She keeps finding things like peeling back the wallpaper and there's baby wallpaper behind it. She's like, what's this doing here? And like the crux of the movie comes to like, she remembers having life in her. She doesn't remember the child, but she goes like absolutely crazy on these aliens and saying like, you'll never take away that feeling that I know that I once held life and that's my child or whatever. And I feel like it's one of those things where like she knows in the back of her head that there was at one point a time, but.
Oh, signs.
Yeah. Yeah, signs. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
Why was I also thinking that?
I know. No.
But the reason I wouldn't be okay with that is because in that movie, and I know which movie you're talking about, I just can't think of the title. Yeah. The lady like fights for this child, even though she doesn't know this child exists, technically, and doesn't have the actual facts. And Rave is just choosing ignorance. And I feel like I would not like Rave more if she just chose to just ignore that she has a child out there who clearly like would need her for something, or if she has an inkling that that's what Khan is trying to tell her about, and she's still choosing to not accept that and just letting that kid be out there in the world.
I was more thinking of it in the sense of like not knowing for a fact that a kid is out there, but knowing for a fact that that was something that happened at one point in her life, not knowing whether they were alive or dead, but she has like such strong feelings, which like I feel like any caring human would, for all the children who are like being tested for, you know, the beads and everything. Yeah. And she is like adamantly against any of, I mean, like I said, any caring human should care about, especially younger people being tortured in that way. But it was like mentioned over and over again earlier on, and I forgot what else I was going to say, but I don't know. Yeah, just somewhere in the back of her head. And it's also something that, like, the body itself does not forget. Like, there has to be some change or shift in the body that she would know, like, well, this is not how it's always been.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Yeah, I was listening. I found the quote that I was thinking of. I could definitely see that sort of intuition being there, even if she's not consciously like, oh, I think I had a child once. Right. Like, I don't think it would be that overt. But there was like when she met Levy at the beginning of the book, it says she was just like looking at Levy, stare caught on her hands, now clasping the swell of her belly, a vision that does something strange to my heart, makes me feel like it's going to burst, and not in a nice way. Mm. So I think she's had some of those moments where she's like, why do I feel like that?
Yeah.
And I think it happened during the Tuca trial too. And then she does explain that like she fought really hard for the Tarek Relican takedown because he was specifically like
at children,
keeping those children. Yeah. Keeping the children hostage and, you know, whatever he was doing to them. That was terrible. Mm-hmm. But that was like something she was really passionate about and like fought really hard for.
For so, some yeah, reason, maybe it's like I guess I connected that to her being in the pits.
But she wasn't a child when she was down there either.
Well, yeah, but still like just the connection that she had done that before. But I guess, yeah, the whole children thing that makes sense.
Yeah. And that might be how she justifies it in her head. And then this is just more of like these little like inklings. Yeah. And then maybe
thinks she likes kids a lot. Cares for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she also keeps thinking like everything I love has been taken from me or everything good. So maybe even if she did think at any point, like, did this happen to me before or something, she probably thinks that. I would assume her first thought would be like, they're not here. Like something terrible happened or.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, the movie that Kyle was referencing is called The Forgotten. It came out in 2004. So if you haven't seen it by now, sorry for the spoilers.
It's honestly even the title really freaky in some part. It's a good watch. Like, it's not like, you know, you gotta see it, but
it's a psychological thriller.
My favorite kind of psych.
The best kind of thriller.
The best kind of thriller. Psychological. The next theory is that Kalis isn't actually bad. It's just misunderstood.
Heartily agree for now.
Okay. Yeah.
Agreed.
I wrote that I merely agree on the grounds that I don't understand them and they haven't done anything bad that I know of. So that lines up. Not evil, just misunderstood.
That's fair.
I just feel like what happened at the beginning where the moons are falling and they just didn't understand. And so instead of figuring it out, they just trapped him, like the gods or whatever.
Yeah.
I just feel like it happened. I mean, who knows what the actual timeline was, but it just felt like a very fast paragraph. They just went to action. Mm-hmm. And so,
like escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
John, you look like you were not agreeing with that.
I mean, maybe initially he wasn't bad, but I think this probably sent him off.
I get you.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to be manipulating Kazari.
I don't think he's very happy.
Maybe. I'm still on the fence about that. Because he also, it sounded like from the prologue that all he ever wanted was someone to like see him and hear him. Mm-hmm. And Kazari, it seems like this is the first person that's ever done that. And it's been 5 million phases since he was trapped. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah. You can take anybody's want and villainize it just by like exaggerating it. Like if he just wants to be seen and heard, then he could be of the mindset of like, I'm going to make everyone see me and hear me. Like you will. No one's going to miss out on me.
It's a long time to just be brewing in a crown, not being able to literally do anything.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. And Kazari is very young and impressionable. Like she could be very easily manipulated or tricked or something. Especially because she says she's in love with him. That is a little red flaggy.
Yeah, he's grooming her.
She is like 123, but that's still pretty young for the Fae, compared I would assume. To him,
yeah.
He's like 5 million, so older than that.
It's a little gross, dude.
So like in fantasy books, like 400, 500 years is hot, but 5 million is too much.
That's a little too much.
Where's the line?
It's too much. Yeah. I feel like there's one or two zeros separating your age. You got to draw the line somewhere. Yeah.
Or six.
Yeah, or six.
I also just put together the other day, I was listening to the prologue again. I don't think I really realized, like we were joking about the beginning of the book where we were like, why are they acting so surprised that the dragons are like floating up into the sky and like falling back down? Like if they created this species, I don't think I put together that the dragons' lifespans are eternal. They were never supposed to die. So I think that at least may have been why it was surprising. I don't know that they would have necessarily planned a way for them to die or maybe thought that they would die the same way that all the other species on the planet did. But I think I missed that they were supposed to literally live forever and then people started killing them or they would choose to end their own lives by calcifying or whatever.
Calcify.
Another theory is that Haze Perch will fall and Hadion will be reborn like Rave was. Any thoughts here? Yeah, I'll go. Nah, not really on board with this. I wrote, it already happened once. Let's not push it. It's kind of my thoughts on it.
I mean, Kyle mentioned earlier that he thought maybe other people would end up doing this, but I don't know who. I mean, obviously we don't know the other stories, but it doesn't sound like it's very often that the dragon takes their person up into the moon with them. These just seem to be, for whatever reason, two instances. But Hadion didn't seem very mentally well put together before this situation happened to him, and I would be worried what he would be like when he came back.
I will say I was not thinking Hadion when I said that. I really don't know who it would be. But I just feel like it'd be interesting to have one more. Just for like, I don't know, another other. To have it sort of be like a, maybe even Rave could see it happening to someone else from her point of view. And be like, oh, that's what I do when I go into this weird like mindset. And try to maybe understand what's happening with her more. But
yeah. I don't know. I don't think I'm on board with this for Hadion specifically. But I will say, I was going to say because Hadion was like already killed, like he was already dead, like they poisoned him or whatever. So he was already dead and then his dragon took him up. But technically that would have happened to Rave too. So
yeah, she was already dead.
Yeah. We don't know like all the details, but she would have had to, somebody would have had to remove the crown from her.
Yeah, I feel like she had to have already been.
She would have been pulseless for at least long enough to have the crown removed and then for Slaughter to come in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Because I feel like that would have been the reason why Slaughter like basically smashed and broke into the bedroom suite or whatever to like take her away because she knew what had happened.
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe because Rave's still alive, like if she got to her right before she officially died and that's when she started like breathing life back into her or whatever and she wasn't actually dead, but maybe she...
Only mostly dead.
Wait, say that again? Yeah.
Like, maybe she wasn't all the way dead when Slaughter was able to take her and was able to, like, breathe life back into her.
Yes, that's just what I was thinking. Maybe.
But how would the crown have been removed?
Tyroth's a jerk and ripped it off her head.
Or Slaughter
put it on Kazari. I don't know.
Just plucked it off with her dragon mouth or talon and threw it down.
Maybe if he stabbed her, she didn't have
true. Forgot about
enough life force or something. And then it was able to be removed because there just wasn't enough life force, even though she was still technically alive. But yeah, I kind of like the idea of like she technically wasn't dead when Slatra took her up, and that's how she was able to, yeah, essentially like mold their life forces together, and that's how she's in Rave, and that's how she was able to like save her or something. I like that idea. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm here for that.
Yeah. It did say something about one of the first diary entries that we get, that Elowen had seen her mom like trying to pry the crown off of her head and like crying because she was like in pain or something and couldn't do anything to get it off. And then Khan had said it has to be removed from a pulseless host. But yeah, maybe
it was just weak enough.
Yeah, maybe her heartbeat slowed just enough.
Yeah, I mean, what they don't have any like beats. Other scientific, you know, like studies on that. Somebody whose pulse is going out, she was most likely going to die anyway. And maybe they were able to take it off at a certain point. But also, like, does the diadem, like this, does it shape to the wearer? Or did they have one specifically designed for a baby that they were able to, like, pop the stone out of Raves and stick it into Kazari's? And, like, you know what I'm saying?
It does sound like a magical binding of sorts. Okay.
I was like, how did they get it off of Rave's head and it fit onto baby Kazari's head?
It's just one
head?
Of those adjustable Burger Sarah King that. Crowns that you can undo and it's sort King. Of like... You know, you put the tab in whatever level you're at.
I'm with you.
I'm going to put that on our list to ask Sarah.
What that crown do?
Write that, please.
What that crown do?
Our next theory is that there are two voices in Rave's head, as like in the italics for the audiobook readers, that they experience this. I don't understand this question. What does this mean?
They're saying that in the other chapter, because the audiobook goes back and forth between two different narrators, they're saying there are two different voices in Rave's head. So one is Slatra, and then there's another one.
Oh, that's not Rave?
Yeah.
Oh, then like the narration.
So there's like a third
male narrator.
A third something in her head.
Yes, that's the theory. I don't think I'm on board with this one, unless the male voice is somehow Kaelis. I really don't think that's the case, but we know Slatra was blocking out Ignos for Rave to protect her, and if she bore the Aether Stone for several phases before she died, like, maybe she's still capable of hearing Kaelis, but I feel like it would be... I feel like he's so restricted to the Aether Stone, I don't know that she'd be able to hear him, like, after having the crown removed. But other than that, I figured it was just an artistic choice for the audio, since it's not conveyed specifically in the writing. Like, there's no clear markers for when those voices go back and forth in the way the book is actually written.
Yeah, I just thought it was like the actual narration of the story, and then like Slotcher like actually prologue. Saying something or thinking something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like the actual, like, they moved here and did this, and then Slotcher would be like, because they know they don't have a chance or whatever, you know, that kind of a thing. Like, less that it was an actual person, but I mean, I guess the theory's there.
Yeah, like, it was interesting though, because like, I felt like I could never find a clear boundary for when it would make sense for the voices to change. Like, I was always surprised by where in the sentence it switched. Yeah, it did seem random. So I do understand.
Responded what? To the narration as well. Like, it wasn't just.
Yeah, that's true.
But if the beginning prologue voice is like one of the gods saying how the world came to be, and Slatra is listening to this god narrate what she's doing and just talking back to it.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I could definitely see why that theory
exists.
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
I don't know. I kind of want to go back and listen to those chapters again. Good thing I'm rereading this book already.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Our next theory submitted is that Kazari will tether the moons to the sky because she can talk with the trapped god, which is Kaelis. I am in, like, heavy agreement with this, specifically because of the whole Kolu prophecy. Agreed. And then now knowing that Kazari is that offspring, I could totally see that.
Yep, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Sure. Calcify.
Yeah, calcify.
Launch it. Send it up.
Our next one was, why would Tyroth allow his daughter to take the oath of chastity? Her bloodline must continue for the Aetherstone, and he knows that. They all do. How is this not a big deal? This person asks. I would think that perhaps while the oath of chastity is not good for a bloodline, for obvious reasons, granted, it is like a very respectable oath to take. And if the king were to stop her from taking a respectable oath simply for his own lineage or her own lineage, it would be like massively frowned upon. And like all the people would see it as an exertion of his will over that of the gods, because she's literally doing this oath to the gods, which I would think most people put above the king. Maybe not to the king's face, but in their own heads. But
yeah,
I feel like if he did that, then people would be like, whoa, you're overstepping your boundaries.
Yeah. And did Elowen do that? Did she like take the oath?
I don't think so.
I don't think she did. But Ostern was still able to like force her to wed Tyroth. So I would assume that Tyroth could still just marry.
Ostern. Yeah.
Ostern. Yeah.
I was thinking
I would assume Tyroth could still. Yeah, no, her parents seemed cool. They were chill.
Yeah, they were super anti-Tyroth.
Yeah, and she was much younger.
Really unnecessary comments.
And Elowen was much younger, but Ostern was still able to like force that. Obviously, he had to kill her family to do it, but boo. I could see Tyroth, if he was that concerned about the bloodline, at some point marrying Kazari off to someone. Maybe he just hasn't found them yet, or maybe Kazari just keeps running away before he can make that happen. But
our next one. Do you think Slaatra will come back in her dragon form? Khan has been piecing her moon charts back together. Would it be enough to bind her pieces back together?
I don't think so. And my only reason for that is because Rave, right at the end, made a connection with Leary and seemed to have something going with that. And I would feel bad for Leary, for her to be like, oh, this other dragon's back. Bye. Aww. Like, you know, kind of thing. Like, I just feel like that little mini storyline there just doesn't feel like that makes sense if Slaatra was just going to come back. But obviously, I could be wrong. Maybe that was just a little mini moment for the moment that it was for her to take care of, wreck, and then move on, you know?
It would be weird for her to have two dragons as well. Like, who?
Two dragons?
That never happens.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think so here. Especially her being, with Slaatra being, like, quote-unquote part of or inside of Rave already. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if that were to happen, if Slaatra were to come back into her body, there would need to be a separation from Rave. That would make the most sense to me.
And I feel like if Slaatra really did, like, give part of her life to Rave, if Slaatra left, then would Rave just die?
Like, right.
Are they connected?
Right. Like, that's what I would assume, you know? Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, though, for Slaatra. Like, I wonder if there's a way that that piece of her can be almost, like, set free at some point, just so that, like, her soul is at rest, almost, if that makes sense.
But she, I don't know. She did it out of love. Like, it was her choice.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if maybe as Rave pieces together all of those things, no pun intended, that happened, like as her awareness of Slaatra and like acceptance of her grows, if there's a way that they could like coexist a little bit more rather than just having to shut each other out to like have control. I could see it being similar to the way that Rave can choose to like listen to the gods, that maybe she could choose to like have more direct interactions with Slaatra rather than like shoving her down under this icy lake or something like that.
Yeah.
Because wasn't that what Vrun said? That he could help her drain the lake?
Yeah. Whatever that means.
He technically didn't finish the sentence.
Well, John did though.
Yeah, but I did. So it's right.
All right. The next theory I feel like shouldn't even be mentioned because we've already discussed this fully. But the theory written in was the other is really Slaatra, which we just had a full-on conversation about. That's the fact. So we clearly believe that. Technically, I don't think it's said in the book. Like, the other is Slaatra, like in a sentence. But I think
in
we've...
the glossary.
Yeah.
Slaatra.
But I feel like we've given all of our facts and reasons why.
Yeah, this is, I feel like this is pretty calcified. I did hear Sarah say in an interview as well that she also didn't explicitly say like yes or no, but she did say it's there, like it's in the text. It's not, it's not specifically spelled out, but the evidence is there. So I feel like this is as confirmed as it can be.
Yep, I'm great with that. And then the next one is how does the Fate Herder or Fate Herders know who to quote unquote herd? Can they hear the gods too, or are they acting of their own accord?
I just stand by my theory of them doing what they want, and them being masters of fate is just like a simple superstition of those who encounter them. Or like, you know, you would say you encounter one and it pushed you this way and be like an old wives' tale. It's like, oh, well, that must be where you're supposed to go and that sort of thing.
I think they're just pushing whoever stinks the most in their immediate vicinity.
Whoever has like a jerky in their pocket, they keep nudging them.
Yeah.
And it really wants me to go this way.
I'm pretty sure it is just one. And because they all freaked out that there was a fate, the fate herder there. Like it was the fate herder. But I don't know. I know this part of the book from all my internet research gets a lot of hate because they feel like she maybe wrote herself into a corner. And this was her weird couple chapters excuse to get out of that with this weird character that just shows up and then never comes back. I don't know that I agree with that moment. Like it's an interesting character or thing to add to the world, but it does randomly just show up and then leave. So I feel like
if you used it too like much, it would feel a lot more like that. Like if it showed up every single time there was a decision to be made and, you know, someone's like, oh man, am I really supposed to kill this person? And the fate herder shows up and like starts pulling like their dagger towards the guy's heart. You're like, it's the fate herder. Sorry, man. And the guy's like, well, no, it's the fate herder. Go ahead and kill me.
Yeah. And it stayed a lot longer than I expected it to. I feel like if it was that she was just in a corner or whatever, it would have been like, oh, this legendary fate herder. And it's like one nudge, bye. Mm. But I don't know. She also, everything feels so intentional. I don't think I'm on board with that, but. And it does say in the glossary, under it just says fate herder, a large silver feline-like creature. And then it says those who have seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always thought it was just one.
Yeah.
My thoughts on that creature will very much depend on if it ever shows up again. Yeah. If it's just that moment, then I feel like I would err on the side of like, yeah, that was a weird way to get your story moving. But if it shows up and does other things and has like other moments where I'm like, oh, now I understand. Which I feel like maybe is a lot of things so far. Like a lot of creatures. I'm like, I guess, yeah. A lot of suspension of disbelief. You know, I just got to go with it. That's the story right now until I learn more.
Maybe it will be like Raven Khan's wedding. And then Rave like looks out at the audience. And then there's just the fate herder appears and just winks at her.
Just nods.
Like,
uh-huh.
Or worse, it's like, happened the whole time.
Or like at the end of the series when inevitably they figure out how to tether the moons to the sky and like it's Kazari because it's the offspring from the prophecy or something. And the fate herder's just like
pans back to the fate herder into the sunset.
Told you it was gonna be a crazy day. Winks at the camera. Goes back to sleep on its nest of fan fiction that it has.
Mm-hmm. Fan fiction? It like dusts its paws off. Like, my work here's done. Our next question is, why do you think the Scavenger King was kept a secret?
I feel like it maybe is one of two things. One, either Austern didn't know that he had this other child. Maybe he's just sleeping around or something happened. Because it would have been while their mom was still alive, right? So, because
I thought he was after Vaya, but now I think he's older than Khan.
I think he's older than Khan. That's why he thinks he has a right to the burn.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a similar situation to like Tyroth and Aayda, where it was just like his mistress who maybe worked at the castle or something.
Right.
And then maybe the mom ran away to get away, or how like Tyroth treated Aayda to be like, well, it was Vaya at the time, but you know how he was talking to who he thought was Aayda and just being like, you think because you're carrying my offspring, you have some right to something, and it was like kind of treating her horrible. And so maybe he tried to hide it, or she ran away or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it says he was cast into the Boltanic Plains and told to run while a roar of fire nipped at his heels.
That makes me feel like Austern sent him out.
Yeah.
And he would have been old enough to run. So like...
Right. So at least
I'm saying just for real, like he wasn't like a baby when he ran off. So he was around for a while. I wonder how many elemental beads he has. Because I feel like since Khan only could do two, then that wasn't enough. You know, like what if he was one of the ones who like didn't have any or something and he was a null?
He does have Ignos, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Because he burns Rafe. But maybe he's just the one. I don't know.
I had said that my guess is that few to no one knows his true identity.
Yeah.
Except maybe Serim.
Ooh.
I'm still on to her with...
Yeah.
Her having seen Rave down in the pits. So it's like, okay, why were you down there in the first place?
Right. She has to have a bigger part in the
I also feel that about the Elding, though, and like him collecting all these children and stuff, or wherever the safe place is that nobody knows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure Island.
They're all going to turn into donkeys.
Yeah. my gosh.
Well, who do you think, speaking of all these people, will be the ultimate big bad of the series? We've named a few potential candidates.
I still think it's the gods. I feel like there's going to be a war of some kind between them. Like, John, I think John was the one that said that Kaelas might want revenge on them, or if Kizari tried to free him, that the other four gods would freak out and try and like contain him again or something. I feel like Kaelas has to be the answer to everything, but like no one would listen to him, which would lead me to believe that Kaelas specifically would be the big bad if it were not for Kizari. If he truly is like in love with her. So I feel like it could be the other four gods who were the ones that like trapped him in the first place and weren't listening.
I think sooner than later, Tyroth and or Kadok, but long-term Kaelas.
Nothing about
like
Arkin?
Like I mentioned earlier.
I could see Arkin being the big bad of book two.
Yeah, but not like maybe. No, but not book three. I don't think so. I think he'll play a part in book two.
Think he might be enemy to ally.
I feel like it'll lead to maybe Tyroth and Kadok. Like maybe he'll get in league with them. I don't know.
What if he gets in league with Khan and then it's like two brothers versus two brothers?
Yeah, that would be very interesting if he like kind of did the same thing that Rave did, but just like came around a lot sooner. Like she's like, oh, Khan's not a jerk. All right. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know.
Those forearms.
He smells too good.
Arkin's nature doesn't really seem that great, so I wouldn't really expect him to just be like, you know what? Yeah, I'm a good guy now. I'm not going to torture anybody else.
I don't know how Khan would be able to forgive him for how he treated Rave or Kizari.
Right.
Also.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I'm looking back through the epilogue now because I was trying to find confirmation if we know like what order the Vagor children were born in. Mm. I don't think it says. Not I don't think it explicitly says. No, I mean, I wouldn't show you the order of their birth because he branches off in a different direction. I don't think it says. It just says that he has plans for Khan Vagor, who took Arkin's revenge for himself. And I think he means like in killing Austern. Like, I think Arkin was the one who wanted to kill Austern because Austern would have banished him.
I get the vibe that it's Kadok, Tyroth, Khan.
No, Khan's oldest, isn't he? And Khan's the only reason oldest? He didn't get her is because he had two elemental beads.
Kadok and Tyroth are twins.
They are twins. I forgot.
On the tree, it does say Khan, Vaya. No, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not in order.
Never mind, it's not in order.
Yeah.
Vaya would be last because their mother died giving birth to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I had assumed this whole time that Arkin would have been younger than Vaya, because Austern would have wanted to secure another heir that he felt was suitable of ruling the Burn, because he thought that Khan wasn't fit to be king because he was only a dual bead.
Okay, yeah.
So that was my thought. But I saw somewhere in a theory or something that Arkin was older than Khan. But I guess we don't really have a way of knowing that at this point in time.
Yeah, right.
So,
interesting.
We'll say something that you said in your answer to this, Khan, got me thinking. Because Kaelas is the god of, like, the void, right? If I'm remembering right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be crazy? All of the gnolls are people who were meant to hear him, but they just can't hear him yet because he's stuck. And as soon as he's released, all of a sudden, all of the gnolls have this void ability, whatever, that they can do. Because they can finally hear who they were always meant to.
That's cool.
And even people who can hear other songs, they could be like, oh, I hear a new one now. And maybe a two bead becomes a three or something.
That'd be cool.
That blew my mind. I love that. Calcify it.
I don't know what you said that brought it to my mind, but I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Interesting.
But then I don't know. Well, I guess it would just be the stone that made Kizari the special one that was able to hear him regardless of him being trapped because he's right there.
Yeah.
Well, and I wonder if Kizari can hear... Do we have any context for which other gods she can hear?
I don't think so.
I wonder if she can hear all of them.
She has or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. Because with the diary entries, Elowen tried and tried and tried to hear any of the gods, and she couldn't hear any of them. And then as soon as she bonded with Slaatra, or as soon as she bore the crown, that none of the creators would shut up?
I think Slaatra.
Yeah, it was Slaatra.
That's interesting. Because
she was singing a song to her.
Yeah.
And that's what started it, and then all of a sudden she could just hear, and they wouldn't shut it.
Okay, I thought it was the crown, but maybe that is a... But it wouldn't always be a dragon thing, right? Because they test, I feel like they test people when they're so young, like kids. Yeah.
But it could come later in life, I would assume. Mm. Like, they just start at a young age to catch as many as they can.
And Kizari has a dragon.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, who do you think will be the ultimate big bad of the series?
I just wrote a joke. This answer just says, me, bitches.
It's Brittany, bitch.
All right, we're going to be moving into some character theories, or rather just some character thoughts, I guess. Our first one, who's your favorite character and why?
This was hard to pick, but I do think Vea is sort of like a hidden gem with what little we got of her. She was real good.
Yeah, I wrote that Pyrok made me laugh the most, probably, like as a silly side character, but Vea is BA, so.
She is. Okay. Yeah. All right. I wrote the Trog.
Of course you did.
A joke, and I meant to come back to this.
Don't. That's not a joke. Don't say that. Be honest. Yeah.
I love her. Get out of your head.
Spin me a web.
Out of your palm holes.
Yeah. It's disgusting. I just wrote Khan because he's hot.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. I would say Khan is probably my favorite. But I really love Vea too, and I'm really enjoying her POV. I hope she's okay.
The next question was, what character would you want to be stuck on a deserted island with, and why? And then it says, parentheses, think Lost vibes. Mm. So like a creepy
like the
island.
Lost Island?
Lots of, no, I think the show.
Yeah, that might change my answer if it's that specific island, not just like a random tropical island. But
I would say Khan for all of the obvious reasons, but also because Ragan would probably be there as well, and he could theoretically just fly us off the deserted island if we needed him to.
Nice.
All right. I wrote Claude, that sassy little wisp. I feel like it'd be a fun god to be stuck with on an island. And sort of in the same vein, just make a little raft, put some wind in the sail, you're out of there.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you would never be like super hot and sweaty. She'd just have a nice breeze. Oh, I know. What a nice breeze. All the time.
Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. I just wrote Vea because she's hot.
Nice. Valid. Also
so
fair.
Valid. Yes. I wrote Khan because he would do everything and he'd keep me safe and alive and I could just lay back and relax and he'd feed me food. You could. And take
drink
care
your
of
coconuts.
Stuff. Yes, exactly. Exactly. In my hammock that he made.
Yeah.
Our next question is one that I'm really excited to hear the answer to. We did talk about it a little bit in our episodes, but the question is, how many red flags did Kyle find in our beloved Khan?
Aside from the usual red flags that are to be expected, it seems, like being violent, being okay with decapitating people he doesn't like, and swearing, there honestly isn't that many. He's patient, kind, caring, never forced her to do anything his way, except maybe use soap, and also never forced himself onto her. Quite the opposite. My boy was begging for scraps. The one thing I've heard people talk about is that he used sex to coerce Rave into agreeing to a deal by way of withholding her orgasm until she agreed, to which I say, okay. Rave also used sex-adjacent activities multiple times to get her way with him from grinding him on. And yeah, I'm not... Let me finish. From grinding on him on a dragon to all these other, like, teasing activities. Not saying it makes it wholly okay for either of them, but they're still on, like, level playing ground. In fact, neither of them used it for anything life-altering, like some other book couples I could name. They used it for, like, literally what it is, like a tease. Not about to have a full-on council sesh about this, but used in moderation. It's part of a healthy relationship between adults. Probably lands somewhere between foreplay and kink play, so I mean, a yellow flag, maybe? They've been warned, but are still good to play. Someday, I'll regret making that sports analogy, because that's not my wheelhouse. But still, both Khan and Ray's ledgers, some of the lightest I've held in a while. Like, is that the iffy that Lauren talked to me about that, where she's like, a lot of people don't like how he did this to Rave? And I was like, I mean, she's done, I mean, they're going tete-a-tete with each other. They're doing the same activity, consensually, I might add, with each other.
True. Because she could have just gotten up and left at any moment, and he would have been like, absolutely. Like, he's the consent king. I feel like he would have just, if she truly was not on board, it would have been fine.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Your emotions about this character are coming in the way of you dishing out red flags compared to your emotions and feelings about other characters from other books that you've just decided you don't like.
No, I didn't. Like, I honestly, to be fair, wasn't truly looking through my first read. I was just trying to read. And then during, like, the second one, I was trying to, with my segment in mind, I was like, I gotta find a flag or two. And it's like, oh, I can't really do it. Also, this might make a lot of people angry, but for either gender in that activity, you're not owed anything out of it. There's not like a, you have to give me this or it doesn't count as a good activity. So saying that he withheld it for a conversation, he can't really withhold it if it's not something that is like, it better happen. But
Lauren, what are your red flags? You look like you're holding on to a lot of them.
Give me your red flags.
About my husband right now? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, let me pull out my journal.
No, I feel like I've just held back in general on this whole series and episode and all the things. And that's okay. This book was not for me. So there's a lot that I'm just choosing to stay positive about the book that I did enjoy and what I did like. And I don't have to just trash on the book the whole time. And that's okay.
It was a very hard story to understand. And like she has said before, some aspects of it, like, I don't think either of us would have been like, oh man, we gotta like finish this book or whatever when we're reading it alone. It's always more fun and like getting it the second time through, learning a lot of things we didn't know before. We both loved the world building and everything and all the characters in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I would agree. It's not like a book that I would say was for me. It just so happened to be a book that I didn't find very many red flags in either.
Well, and even the person I was talking to today about DNFing, I encouraged them to get through chapter 15, listen to the first podcast episode, see if that helps you understand it more. Like, I'm not like anti this book in general. I'm not going to go around telling no one to read it. Like, because I understand that a lot of people, including you guys, did enjoy this book, and that's okay. It's just...
Yeah. It's also one of those, like, the world building is so good. I do want to give the second book a try because I really, really want it to, like, lock into, like, an amazing epic story with how Lauren was saying, like, it's an atypical story right now with no big bad or anything or any major battles. And I sort of want it to move into that area. It's just too good of a world to let go. But the story itself, I'd love to read more about the world, even if it's a different story, but... We can move on to the next question.
Well, no, it is interesting, though, because I was talking to somebody about this the other day, too, because a lot of the time, like, I, at least from the last, like, official update that I had seen last year, this was planned to be a trilogy. I don't know if that's changed or not, and that's something we can ask Sarah about. But a lot of the time with a trilogy, the complaint is that the second book is not good because it's all set up for the end of the series. Like, the first book really grabs you, and then the second book always sucks, and then the third book is great because they're resolving everything. And sometimes the second book feels like it could have been an email. That's happened to me before too. But I feel like with this one, she spent a lot of the first book setting up the next two. There's so much set up in this first book, and you're piecing together a lot of information. There's a lot of like reveals about where we are now that I think the story can really take off for the next two books and not have that same lull that a lot of trilogies do. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what she does with book two.
Yeah. I feel like in terms of world building, yes, she has built an amazing world with this first book. And I hear a lot of things too about like books or book series where people are like, that was a pretty okay series. Like, I really enjoyed some things about it. But the fan fiction, oh my gosh, they took it and ran with it. Have you seen the other stories people are making? And I feel like this could be one of those where it's like people fall in love with the world and make their own stories in it. And you're like, oh my gosh. And someone writes a fan fiction on it and turns it into their own book or something. But because it is such a varied world, like, there's so much stuff. I don't think that even anyone could cover the whole world in a series, even like if it's her book, she's not going to cover everything in it, I don't think. But is there more to Khan's character? Does he have secrets we don't know about yet? Specifically, why was he in that seedy bar in chapter one? Was it for a moon shard or something sketchy?
To answer that question directly, I think he was looking for Rook here.
Yeah.
Remind the readers or the listeners who Rook is.
He is the
salute. See you later. Signing off.
Yeah, he was the, I forget his the creature's name. He was the feline the creature.
Woto.
The Woto, yeah.
The Woto, yeah, in the cell next to Rave. And that's when...
Who had the moon shard.
Yeah, who had the moon shard. Mm-hmm. That's what I think he was... He, at this point, maybe he had probably heard that he had a moon shard, and so he was looking for him.
Yeah. I buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or looking for whoever his master was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely don't think that the moon shards, or like searching for those or anything, are like sketchy. I don't think that that was like a weird adventure for him or whatever, but there has to be something more to Khan other than just being really good looking. Like he has, I want strong, to see too. A lot more something from him.
He does have a
looking for more.
He does have a lot of scars that we don't know anything about yet. He's like covered in scars and we know nothing about it.
I just assume they came from like Tuca trials or something along those lines. Not maybe Tuca trials, but like fighting with the clan, the Joku clan.
Yeah.
But
well, he was part of the clan, I thought for a really long time before he even met Elowen, right? But there was a moment where she said that in like any of her flashbacks of him, he didn't have any of those scars. And now he does. So it would have had to happen like since she died.
Yeah, because he like went away for a couple of weeks and came back with his Melmer. Mm-hmm. So it was like sometime around the same time that he was with them.
Oh, but that's like when he joined?
I kind of feel like that makes sense because he would have got his Melmer. But then at some point, he was the king of the Joku clan.
Yeah, that's true. Mm.
So like... He would have obviously had to fight his way to that position to a certain extent and maybe even like fought to keep that position because they seem to be very like primal in that way that they have to like fight to be alpha kind of energy.
That could be.
But yeah, but aren't they... I'm not saying like it couldn't be other things too. Just
yeah. It seems like there's more to that because don't they like nullify them while they're fighting in that clan? But I think a lot of his scars were burn scars. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they couldn't have fire in the pits, but... I thought they were burns like on his thighs and like his hands and stuff that looked intentional or something.
I didn't get that they were all like burn scars. I mean, yeah, she clearly said that the ones like on his legs were. They were all other just like kind of random scars.
I also would think that Austern didn't go down without a fight. So it could be
true.
Some sort of, you know, something from that battle.
Very true. Yeah. Yeah. There could have been a lot there.
Do you think he's endgame?
Yes. For me, he is.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe not for Rave.
I asked that question with no predisposition on my opinion. I'm just wondering if you thought he was or not. There seems to be a lot of the old switcheroo in these sorts of series. So
I don't know, only because Rave is so still against everything. And he will take whatever. I mean, we all say that he's consent king, but like he still has not taken her leave me the heck alone to heart. But at some point, if he does listen to her and actually leaves her alone, then
leave me the heck alone. Let's make out. No, don't. Let's have sex. No, maybe we should part ways forever and I'll forget that you exist.
I will say, okay, now that we're mentioning that, in Lauren's defense, the whole like, well, that's not what you said when you were drunk. I'm like, that's not, you can't just throw that in people's
that's
faces.
Not
yeah, like that's not exactly, you can't take what people say when they are drunk and be like, no, you said it. It's true.
Fair.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
7 p.m.
Insulin sensitivity.
Always track
every Stop it. Stop it.
They don't know your body, only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
All right, our next question. What happened to Grimm? Is he actually Arkan in disguise?
What?
Your face.
That would be my
reaction to this was, what kind of question is this? Like, is he Arkan in disguise? Like, what? No.
No, I just think Grimm is off to get a little baby dragon and he'll be back soon. And Arkin in disguise literally never crossed my mind. That would be wild. Mm.
Maybe I could see maybe someone thinking that just because Grimm had just disappeared and then we get Arkin the epilogue. But the timelines wouldn't have matched up for that at all because the epilogue would have happened much earlier in the book.
Wasn't Grimm getting like real up close and friendly with
Vaya? Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be kind of that weird would be weird as well.
Well, and Arkin was apparently banished, so it wouldn't be someone who's been part of the burn for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So if like Grimm just randomly showed up after Austin had died, and then Grimm just showed up to all of a sudden be the second hand man. Like if there was other stuff like that, I would be maybe more. Yeah.
Just like, he's dead. My banishment's over.
I don't know. I don't know about that one. All right. The next one just asked for us to pick our favorite side character. And my favorite side characters are the same as my favorite characters, which are Pyrock and Vaya.
My favorite side character was Essie, R.I.P. I want to say Slotcher or Vaya, but they both get their own POV, so I don't know if they count as side characters, but they're not. I guess I wouldn't fully call them main characters. So I'm just going to say Pyrock because he's hot.
Valid.
Honestly, I don't really have one. I feel like we haven't solidified the inner court characters enough yet. Mm. It's just basically been Rave and Khan the entire time. I don't know. Rygen, maybe.
I mean, I was also going to say Vaya. I didn't know if having a POV put them out of the running for a side character. I mean, she was really only there for the last third quarter of the book.
Yeah.
So, it was pretty late in the book.
Vaya still, I guess.
Yeah. I'm a fan. All right. What kind of character arcs could you see coming in books 2 and 3?
I could see Kazari and Grimm, possibly, or at least having their own POV chapters, even if it's not the whole book. I guess the question is arcs specifically, but I don't know. I envision Kazari definitely. I feel like we could get Grimm's story in Gondra. I think that would be cool.
Yeah,
that would be cool. It would it would end with some kind of cliffhanger, and then several chapters would go by, and then they'd be in a battle or something, and they're like,
yeah,
they would think the great silver saber scythe is attacking them. And they see Grimm on top of it or something. And they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Something like that.
I'll calcify that. Yeah. Fully on board with that.
I said that I just like to see a mind weft get involved POV style. I think a perspective from someone who has that ability, or maybe one of the characters has it already and they're hiding it somehow. And a new character comes along with it. I just feel like having that perspective would be really cool for them to just be talking to people, and if they tagged what the other person was saying with they lied, because they just know that they're lying outright, don't have to wonder at all. I think it'd be funny to read something like that.
I like that.
Yeah, I feel like with the openness of other characters having POV chapters, I feel like there could be a lot of different stuff we see. We could even get Grimm getting his dragon, or wherever else that they really take us. We could jump back to Serene, or who knows? We could be all over the place. True. But I would just really like to see Rave come out of this weird in-between life of, I'm Rave, but I refuse to learn about my past. Either accept that and move and do the things, and you're Rave fully and we're doing something as a decision as Rave that still affects the story somehow. Or you learn the information and you make decisions based off of that. Whether or not those end up being the same decision, of whatever action they decide to take, either way, or I don't know. But I just would love to see that conversation that we never got to have between Khan and Rave finally happen, and then Rave make decisions based off of all the information that she could have, I guess.
Yeah, I think it will. I could see that happening in book 2 of her finally getting all the information and moving forward from there. But it feels like a lot of it has been, a lot of that development with her character of accepting her past has been contingent upon her actually obtaining all of the information. So I have confidence once we get there, it will change. But I could see Pyrock being forced to step up and take care of the burn while everyone's inevitably gone for a while, because everyone else has kind of left at this point. And Pyrock, I think the last we saw of him was that Khan had tasked him with taking the mind weft to a safe location or something. But since they all act like he doesn't do anything. I could see him maybe having to step up and like do some stuff while people are gone. I would expect to get more of Vaya's backstory and maybe see her soften a little bit. But I love that she's a total badass. And I think she will continue to be that way. But I think I could see with like this information about Kazari and stuff, feeling a little bit closer and more compassionate for some of those people. I do hope that Grimm comes back with the great silver saber scythe. I think a lot of Kazari's story I could see being reserved for book three, just because we have a lot to resolve before we fully get to like a Kazari and Kaelis situation. Arcan, I could see just being like purely evil until someone kills him. I don't know that we would get much of an arc with Arcan, ironically. But everyone else just kind of feels like a wild card to me. There's a lot that's like up in the air, but I am excited to see Leary heal and bond with Rave and see more of that little storyline play out too. I don't know.
Well, out of all those people, which character would you love to have as a co-host on the podcast?
Ooh, fun.
Kazari, so she can spill all the tea Kaelis has been holding on to for millions of phases.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
I wrote it's got to be Pyrok, right? I mean, he's your the wit. I guess your entertainer of sorts.
You just want someone to snack with
wild card
on the podcast.
That's true. I hadn't even thought about that.
You could snack with Rave. She loves snacks.
I hadn't even thought about that, actually. Good idea.
I did put Rave just because she tells it like it is. I feel like I would appreciate that energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wrote Vaya because I just love her, first of all. But she also is one that just kind of tells it like it is.
And oh, yeah.
There's, you know, she just puts it all out there in the best way. So.
Heyo.
Mm-hmm. Heyo. All right. I mean, I'm not taking it back. I'm so good with it.
I said what I said. Which relationships do you want to see developed more in book two?
The easy choice is Khan and Rave, because I feel like we're still stuck in sort of phase one of that relationship, no pun intended. I fear that Lauren saying he's too perfect, though, and like with the lack of knowledge on both sides about Kizari, that we're ripe for a big old miscommunication trope.
I replied to that and wrote, as ripe as an avocado.
An avocado. Yep. Thanks. Amazing. Yeah, I feel like we have a lot of like hints at relationships and flirty looks or a sassy comment here and there, but nothing that's like, I don't know, anything confirmed or fully developed, even with Raven Khan, even though they've had some bigger interactions. So I think all of them. I would love to see all the relationships be developed.
Fair. Yes. Same. I would love to see more. Well, I'd love to see more of the inner circle relationships as a whole. Not necessarily that, I think because they're already developed, but we've just met those characters. So I'm excited to like get to know all of them more. I really want Rave and Kazari to meet. I have no idea what that development would look like, but I would hope that it's like a really positive, like forward moving thing for both of them. Same for Kazari and Khan. They have a relationship already, but I assume that it will change once Khan does go full Papa Bear on Kazari. Assuming she makes it out of Arkan's little torture chamber in one piece. I'm sure she will, but.
I would love to see all the bromances, Khan and Pyrok, Grimm and Rowan. Rowan's a dude, right?
Yes.
Yes. I'd even settle for the cringe twins as a build-up to their terribleness so that heavy be the hand of literary retribution. You know what I mean? Yeah. Wow. Nice. I wrote, write them, Sarah. Write the bromances.
I love that.
All right. Well, that takes us to our rankings and wrap-up for this series, which is wild. Can you rank all of the books / series that you've covered on the podcast so far? John?
No.
Probably. My first comment here was, what have we read?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
But Throne of Glass would probably be my one. It would be Throne of Glass, Quicksilver, Fourth Wing.
The Moon Hatched.
No, sorry. Throne of Glass, Quicksilver, When the Moon Hatched, Fourth Wing.
Oh.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, ho, ho.
Kyle?
I'm not probably, but I have no idea right now. I feel all so right. Uncomfortable ranking some of them because they are incomplete.
Yeah. Most of them are. That's fair.
Are you answering, Con?
I don't know. I hate these questions. Some of them, I don't know that I even have a definitive answer, because my first experience reading Throne of Glass and Fourth Wing were off the podcast. And then I would say, like, the Quicksilver episodes have been my favorite to record. Like, we had so much fun with those. I feel like those have been my favorite episodes that we've done on the podcast.
Yeah, is it but our when favorite the moon read or our favorite recording?
Well, yeah. See, I feel like that would change it. Because When the Moon Hatched has been my favorite reading experience on and off the pod, I feel like. But Quicksilver, I love the book so much. And they were like such great episodes to record. So I don't know. I don't have an answer. I'm taking a cop out.
Well, I actually answered. So shout out to me. High five myself. I put Fourth Wing as my first. But I also just love the series of Fourth Wing. I have like a bajillion copies of the books, and Con and I have some fun memories of like our Iron Flame trip and all the things like that. So I think it just like has a special place in my heart. I freaking love Quicksilver with everything in my person, and Kingfisher's everything. And then I really loved Throne of Glass. I think I would have loved it like die hard even more if I was able to just read it all really, really fast. So it's the only reason it's like third for all of my Throne of Glass diehard fans. And then surprise, surprise, When the Moon Hatched is last.
All right, next question. Can we get an updated book boyfriend ranking from everyone?
I've never given one of these, I don't think. I've ever actually made one. So same. I still don't feel like I could rank them. So I just listed a bunch of my favorites I could think of as they came to mind. So this is in no particular order. Some of my book boyfriends are Hunt Athalar, Hudson Vega, Zayden Ryerson, Kale Westfall, Cassian, and Kingfisher. Your face. I just have to giggle when I think of them.
This is so funny because I feel like half of these would not be on mine, but I also didn't type one out for this.
Yeah. But you did have one last time, and I didn't.
I did. So I typed one for Quicksilver. Yeah. I don't know. I just wrote, this is also an unfair question. I want to hear John's answer to this question.
Okay. First time ranking these, by the way. And these are more of an order, but also just, I'm trying to think if I would have any more on my list. I don't really know. Anyway, Rhysand and Khan, kind of like, I mean, pretty
one
much they're, yeah, they're one cheek in the bench
it.
At the top. Yep. Okay. Next is Hunt Athalar, then Cassian, then Ethan Holstrom.
Ooh. Hot take.
Hot take.
Wow. Okay.
Then Dorian and Zayden.
Nice.
That's kind of all who I can think of.
I'm okay with almost all of your list except for the Ethan one, but that's okay. Kyle.
Interesting. I forgot about this question, but thinking of it right now, I'm just going to go in reverse order of what we've covered. I don't know if I have one for this book necessarily, like one that I was like, oh yeah, that's a book boyfriend for me. Most of them, not my style. Oh, I can't remember his name even though from Quicksilver.
Carrion?
Swift?
No.
No, his second. Kingfisher's second.
Loras or Renfis?
Renfis. Yes. Renfis.
Oh, Renfis.
There you go. Yeah, John, you know me too well. from Fourth Wing, I'm going to go with Sawyer. I have a soft spot for Sawyer.
Oh, yeah.
And then from Throne of Glass, always a Dorian stan. I like Kale, but not as not my book boyfriend. And
he's Lauren's book boyfriend.
That's okay.
I'll say, stay with me on this, but Lysandra, she could be a boyfriend if she wanted to be.
I'm here for that. Sounds great. I mean, you guys could have picked your book girlfriends, I guess. We could have asked that.
You can definitely do that.
I didn't put Kingfisher in there.
We know yours is Manon, Kyle.
Manon, yeah, would be one of them for sure.
Carl.
As a boyfriend? Yeah, I guess. We haven't covered Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Yeah, but it's still, I have boys that we didn't cover.
Oh, that's true.
That's fair. Yeah, okay. So
does John.
Throw Carl on there. He's got some strong.
Yeah, they're just your book boyfriends.
Yeah.
He's got nice
strong
feet.
Strong standards. He does have nice feet.
I would put Lorith in there too. So I have revived.
John's adding to his list right now. He's
because
typing
in
additions.
I thought I had written in Kingfisher. I think I put him in there.
Yeah, I'm adding Renfis. How did I forget Renfis? And his accent.
How did you?
Yeah, he'll remember that you forgot him and left him off the list.
Maybe he'll keep talking I don't forget.
Yell at me all you want as long as that accent keeps coming.
That accent.
That accent.
I think I'm similar to John in that Rhysand and Khan would definitely be at the top. Hunt is not
I'm
in
on
my
the bottom.
List.
You know what I'm saying? Wait, hold on.
Oh my gosh. I'm not a Hunt girly, so Hunt would not be on my list, but I am a Rue Dannen girly. It's probably pretty much the same as my list for Quicksilver, which I guess I could probably pull up on here because I just had it open. Yeah, it's right here. Well, let me just read you my list and we'll just add in Con in the top spot with Resand. So one would be Resand slash Con, two Dorian, three Carrion, four Kingfisher, five Luther, six Azriel. Although I think after finishing Spark of the Everflame, I might flip-flop and do Azriel fifth, Luther sixth, only because I just really love Az and I feel like he'll shoot up the list once we get his book. Riddick seven, Max Antarius Farleone eight, Cassian 9 and Rune Dannen 10. But then I was already struggling with that because I feel like Rune shouldn't be in the 10th spot. But
yeah, you should.
John was never very impressed with Rune.
What did he do? Tell me what he did. Exactly. You can't.
He had a big sword. He did. Just saying.
He did.
They all do. Okay. Nothing new. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking about. Who doesn't? Par for the course in these books, man.
That's funny. All right. Keep it moving, Kyle.
Well, without spoilers, if possible, which podcast book, so specific to the ones we covered, has had your favorite villain?
I don't want to give any spoilers. So I will say I think the villain introduced in Air of Fire is still my favorite.
Nice. Kyle?
I sort of enjoy the shifting villain in the Empyrean series. Like for each book, it was a different person that they were going up against. So,
My favorite podcast villain is the vampires, if you can even call them that, just because I like vampires.
I said probably Throne of Glass, but not the same one that Connor said. Mine was a more like love to hate kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Love to hate this villain. Yeah, the weasel.
The weasel.
Weaselton.
And our next one. If you had to pick one podcast book to reread immediately, which would it be?
Which one's the shortest?
It's probably one of the Throne of Glass books, which is the last thing you'll want to do.
Yeah. Dang it.
I think it's Throne of Glass or Crown of Midnight would be technically the shortest. Yeah.
I'm very much not a rereader type of person by free will. Sure. So...
Oh, mine is Quicksilver immediately because Brimstone's gearing up and I'm ready for that reread.
I am too. I am currently rereading When the Moon Hatched for content purposes, but I am very excited to start my reread of Quicksilver, especially the closer that we get to the release of Brimstone. I'm so excited.
And I was probably going to say When the Moon Hatched.
Yeah. Promise. Yeah. Reread it with me right now.
Nice. Right away.
Catch up.
That's funny. All right. The last question. What are you most looking forward to in The Ballad of Falling Dragons? I wrote that I'm really excited to learn who the antagonist is in the story and see maybe how our heroes overcome that together instead of, I say fighting against each other, but more maybe just like Rave's refusal to learn the stuff makes it feel like they're not like on the same side right now for Khan and Rave specifically. So like some sort of everyone coming together against some antagonist or some big bad
common
of some
goal.
Sort.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I said dwagons falling.
Dwagons falling to the sky.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe something to do with the Great Flirt, because that seems to be, we made fun of the name a lot, but maybe the new generation of dragons will have a part to play.
Good point.
Ooh, nice, I like that.
That's fun.
I want more action stuff like the first other chapter, the Tuca trial with Khan and Honk. Like, more of that, more of it, and... Of course, more chest pounding. Thanks, Kyle. We're off to a great start.
Wow. That was seven. That was seven from Kyle to John just now.
I didn't take that to be the chest pounding unheard they were giving of. To each other.
Yeah, I feel like it was like,
no,
it was
not.
Very rhythmic.
Yeah.
But
still. Anyway.
Seven for me.
Unheard of on this podcast.
Unheard of.
Oh, my word.
For me, I am really intrigued by everyone being separated at the start of book two, because I think all of our own characters are going to have their own little adventures for a while, potentially good and bad. But once they reunite, kind of like Lauren said, I'm looking forward to the relationships deepening and then like seeing them fight together. I think will be really cool. Most of all, I'm excited to learn more about Arcan, which I assume will be lots of book two, and then the gods, which I assume would be more of book three. But I will take all the little morsels I can get in the meantime.
You would say little morsels, you trog lover.
You trog. Delicious morsels. Like
go eat a chair.
Oh, man. Well, next week, we're going to be meeting with the one, the only, Sarah A. Parker to bring our own questions and some of yours to her and sort of discuss this book and maybe the coming book and all the things happening in her world as an author. If you would like to join us on Discord, we will have spoiler-free and spoiler-filled channels, as always, to talk with like-minded folks about this episode, any other series we've covered. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok for exclusive content, behind-the-scenes podcast news, and merch announcements as well.
Yes, head on over to betweenpagesandfriends.com for Patreon perks and to sign up for our newsletter for all news and things happening at Between Pages and Friends. Till then, stay wordy, stay nerdy, don't stress, and stay blessed.
Bye-bye now. Get out of here, you trog lovers.
Hey. You troggers.
Go eat a chair, okay, you bye. Dirty trog.
You chair chomper.